What's going on, everybody? This is Nico, and you are listening to yet another edition of your favorite podcast in the whole wide world. It is the Nico Show for Friday, September 15th, 2017. Nico's back. All right. Yeah, that's right. I'm here. It's the Nico Show. Oh, and I thank you so very, very much for joining me. And I know what you're thinking. Nico, you haven't done a show for a month. It's been a full month since we've heard your dulcet tones screeching into our ear holes. And I say to you, damn right I haven't done a show in a month. Tired of this shit. Sick of it. Sick of this disrespect. Yeah, that's right. That's a K at the end of that word. That's how you know I'm serious. Damn disrespect. I'm sick and tired of coming out here. You just snapping your fingers, ringing your little bell, being like, come dance for me, monkey. And here I am running out, wide-eyed, hands behind my back, ready to serve my master in any way he asks of me. You tell me, do your little podcast show with your microphone. Live for my enjoyment. I am done debasing myself. I'm done putting my life on the line for you. I live to serve a greater purpose. And I've had it with your whims and your fancies. All right? That's what midgets and NFL players are for. All right? I'm done lowering myself for your enjoyment. Okay? I do my schedule on this podcast. I march to the beat of my own drum. And if I want to take a month off, you're goddamn right I'm going to take a month off. And you can wait. You can wait until I'm ready. Until then, I'll be in my trailer, powdering my nose, putting my face on. No, I'm sorry. I'm just sorry. I'm sorry. Life's busy. Life's stressful. I've been doing podcasts. I've been around. I just haven't done this one. You know, if you have that particular podcast taste where you're craving me just talking by myself, I apologize. But chances are, like, you're a fan of my other podcasts, like 2 Cents Radio or Why Is This a Thing or something. And I've been doing plenty of those, so I've been out there. And if you're listening to those, you know that I'm doing okay. Everything is well. I understand the last time that we spoke, again, this was a month ago, right after my 22nd birthday, I wasn't in the best place ever. You know, there was a little bit of inner turmoil. I was struggling with some things. I was very honest about the stuff that I was struggling with. And I'm getting there. I'm getting better. I am persisting, as Katy Perry would say on her armband. You know, life goes on, and, I'm kind of happy that I haven't done this show in a month, because it gave me a chance to recharge, and I didn't have to, you know, walk you through, every bit of self-doubt and depression, you know, because that stuff is tough sometimes. But I will say, a month later, I'm feeling better, I'm doing well, I'm working through things, although I am not taking 100% of the initiative that I wish I would take. This is something that I have to improve with. I said about a month ago that I would start going to therapy, that I was going to track down a therapist, work through some issues, and then talk about those issues on here. Well, a month has passed. I have not found a therapist, and I have put those issues on the back burner yet again for the quote-unquote more important things in my life, work, school, etc. I apologize for that as well. I'm sorry. I feel like I owe you that, and I haven't done it. But I guess we'll fake our way through it for now. No, I don't want to. I don't want to go down that road again. We've done this already in the past. Look, it's been a month. I'm back. We've missed a lot. I'll do my best to catch up on that and make up for lost time. Here's the deal. In the last month, we missed the 3-year anniversary of this podcast. Holy shit. As on and off as this thing has been, there have been a number of hiatuses, particularly over the last year. 3 fucking years on the internet doing the Nico show, talking about whatever the hell I want to talk about. My Lord. The fact that you have stuck with me every step of the way is in itself a small miracle. The fact that I have stuck with myself and my goals that I set for myself along the way is even a larger miracle than that. There is nothing in my life, I say this all the time, there is nothing in my life that I have given this much time to, that I have stuck to this loyally, that has allowed me to grow creatively, professionally, and quite frankly, as a human being in the way that this podcast has. So I want to thank each and every one of you for giving me a reason to do this. Thank you very, very, very much from the bottom of my heart for caring about what I have to say. I have never taken that fact for granted. I will never take that for granted because it continues to shock and befuddle me each and every week. The fact that you care about my point of view, the fact that you care about my life, my perspective on life, the stories that I tell, the opinions that I spew out of my ass is confusing. It makes no sense, but thank you for confusing me because that's the reason why I feel the need to do this. Lord knows I have tried quitting so many times along the way. And I'll be honest about that. This thing's a struggle sometimes. They call it a labor of love because first and foremost, it is a labor. It is work. It is sometimes hard work. Preparing what I want to say, coming up with an outline for this, takes some time. Editing this thing takes some time, and recording it when you're not in the mood to record it is a struggle, especially when you're not making money off it. And the only thing that's holding you accountable are the 100 or so people that have hit subscribe on iTunes or just my own sense of motivation and commitment, right? That's it. That's the only thing that keeps me going. And that is sometimes very thin. I'm so happy that I have that motivation. I'm so happy that I've stuck with it because it brings me so much joy and satisfaction once I've done it. It's awesome. I encourage everybody, if you don't have a passion, if you don't have something like this that just makes you happy and that is something you can think about when you're not doing anything else, that provides sort of an escape from your life, from your family, from your friends, from work, from school, if you don't have something like this that provides that escape for you, I strongly, strongly recommend that you find it. You find that thing that keeps you going. You find that thing that keeps you excited and fresh every day. You find that thing that you truly have passion for, that you want to get better for, and that ultimately you will work to accomplish, right? Hard work is a great feeling. Struggle once overcome is a great feeling. And that labor of love is the best way to achieve that euphoria. So that is what I have gotten out of the last 3 years. That's what I hope to achieve over the next 3 years. I am shocked that it's still a thing, but I am so very, very happy that I can say the Nico Show on and off has been in existence for over 3 years now. And if you have been with me since the beginning, you are the reason for it. Thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. Okay, we're done. Let's get to the show. It is mid-September. It is the fall. I feel like there's a lot to talk about, even though I'm not going to get to that much today. Let's start the show, shall we? Here's the first segment. Ladies and gentlemen, can you hear that? Yeah, that's right. You hear. Yes, that is the sound of a bass drum. It's not that finely tuned of a bass drum, but it is keeping rhythm for a marching band nonetheless. Or maybe a tribe of Cherokee Indians, I'm not sure. Regardless, they need to get a better tuner because the pitch sounds like a guy slapping his leg. But that drum represents a slow march. A march that has been coming for 7 months. And it's getting louder. because that season has arrived. Folks, it's time to talk football. Yes, America, football is back, and Nico's here to talk about it. All right. Man, most people hate this segment. I can't tell you how many complaints I've gotten, both in real life and on the interwebs, about my stupid football opinions. We get it. The Jets suck, Nico. How many basic cable sports networks do we need saying the exact same shit before we get it through our thick skulls? The Jets are horrible, and you, a 22-year-old college student from Connecticut, does not need to get on his podcast and tell us about it. Well, I'm going to do it anyway, ladies and gentlemen. Football is back. We're going to talk about the first week action and make some insanely early Super Bowl predictions for this entire season, my thoughts. It's all here, and we're ready to go. Fantasy is back. Not going to talk too much about fantasy, because if there's one thing that's more annoying than a 22-year-old college student talking about football on his podcast, it's a 22-year-old college student talking about fantasy football on his podcast. I will simply say this. Nico DiGregorio is poised to have one of the most dominant fantasy seasons in the history of fantasy football. That's right. You heard me. I got Kareem Hunt somehow. In the fourth round, he had the top scoring week of any fantasy football running back. He is for the Kansas City Chiefs. He led a triumphant victory over the New England Patriots on opening night. He also has Julio Jones on his fantasy team. Don't know why I'm talking in the third person. Julio Jones is also on his fantasy team. Doug Baldwin, Jimmy Graham, Carson Wentz is his quarterback. Bilal Powell, of the New York Football Jets, is also on his fantasy team, along with Pierre Garçon. But the most interesting detail, of course, Jordan Howard on the fantasy team. And he, of course, the running back for the Chicago Bears, may not be the best running back on his own team. So I'll just say this. I had the top scoring week in the league, had like 137 points and a half point PPR. I know you don't know what that means. Deal with it. I'm excited about fantasy football. I'm juiced. I'm ready to go. Man, getting back in the swing of things, gambling on some games, betting some teasers, making some picks, setting some lineups, nothing like it on a Sunday afternoon. 9 hours of NFL Red Zone never felt so sweet. Here are my thoughts on week one. This is a common theme among sports commentators. This is a common theme of this podcast, not only in the realm of sports, but in any area of life. I always come back to this same cliche. The more things change, the more they stay the same. And it's so funny how after all these off-season moves, all these free agent signings, all these trades, all these draft picks, Mel Kiper's big board, all these months later, the NFL has not changed one iota. There was really nothing in week one that surprised me whatsoever. Like, there were a few upsets, and there were a few games that I did not predict correctly, but there were no real shocks in the whole slate of games. The most surprising thing happened on night one when the Patriots lost at home to the Chiefs. Alex Smith looked like Aaron Rodgers. Tom Brady looked like my grandfather. Bill Belichick's defense looked weak, like a two-hand touch league. And I cannot, for the life of me, name something more surprising than that. That was it, right? Like, the Cowboys have a great offensive line. Dak is pretty good. Zeke is one of the best running backs in football. So as long as their offensive line holds tough, they're going to win a bunch of games. The Giants have a great defense and a shitty offensive line, and if Odell Beckham Jr. is not there to bail Eli Manning out, that offense is flaccid, for lack of a better term. Seattle's got a great defense, has the exact same problem as the Giants. They have no line. So Russell Wilson can play extraordinarily well, but as long as he's going up against a fairly good defense, he has no time to make any moves. So, yeah, Seattle lost week one to Green Bay, who has the best quarterback in the league, has a very effective offense, and seems to now, with a few key free agent signings, finally cobble together some semblance of a defense. Perhaps in the playoffs, that'll pay off and they can make the Super Bowl for once. But they played well. They are perhaps the most impressive team after week one, but that's about that. The Chiefs are always well coached. Andy Reid is a very good coach. Eric Berry is a phenomenal defensive player. He effectively kept Gronk under wraps for that entire Thursday night game. Now he's out for the season. So there goes the Chiefs' chances of winning a Super Bowl. Not like they had any legitimate chance anyway. They could perhaps catch Tom Brady on an off night, but the Patriots will figure it out and will be just fine down the stretch. I believe that they will win the AFC yet again. Denver looks very good on defense. Trevor Siemian is okay on offense. They're not a serious contender, nor are the Raiders, who have not put together a particularly good defense to match the MVP level talent of Derek Carr. What else? The Jets are the worst team in the league? No. Here's a surprise. That's right. The Jets are not the worst team in the league. I won't talk too much about the Jets. Yes, they have perhaps the worst offense in the history of the NFL. Josh McCown looked even worse than I thought he was going to look. Like, they just cannot move the ball down the field on anybody. Nevertheless, the mediocre Buffalo Bills. What was he, like, zero touchdowns, two picks, like a 29 QBR? Was that Josh McCown week one? Just horrendous, the Jets. And by the way, I am rooting for this scenario. I'm going to be very clear. I am a New York Jets fan, have been a New York Jets fan for a very long time now. I am actively rooting against the New York Jets in every single game they play in 2017. There will not be one game where I am rooting for them to win. Not one. Not against the Patriots, not in any division game, not in the most meaningful games and the most meaningless games. There is not a single game this year that I want the Jets to win. Why? Number one, I am picking against them in every single wager I make this year. If I'm putting any taste down in Vegas, I am not putting a dime on the Jets. Therefore, I will not root for them to cover any point spread, as large as it may be. And number two, I am all in on this year's tanking. Let's throw the season away. Let's fire Todd Bowles as a scapegoat. Let's get the first overall pick in the draft, and let's get either Sam Darnold out of USC or Josh Rosen out of UCLA. That is how I am watching the Jets in 2017. I am watching part of their games on Red Zone. I am enjoying them losing. And then on Saturday afternoons, I'm watching UCLA and USC games. I'm looking at what our future quarterback looks like. And I am filling myself to the brim with false hope. So understand, if you care about me, you will root against the Jets too. Okay, I don't think that's much to ask out of my podcast audience. But the big surprise out of this week is it turns out, if Andrew Luck is not on the Colts, we're not the worst team in the league anymore. How bad are the Indianapolis Colts? Scott Tolzien. Turns out you take the quarterback out of it. The Colts are top to bottom the worst team in the league. They can't do shit. Which is why Andrew Luck is probably like the third best quarterback in football. I wouldn't put him any lower than five, because last year, what did they have, like six or seven wins with him? If he doesn't play a snap this entire year, they will not win a single game. That's the biggest surprise, I guess, of the week, is somehow The poor get poorer in the NFL. And the Jets are not even the bottom of the barrel. Not particularly shocking, but there's an observation for you. I guess the most impressive sort of teams, the ones that came out and surprised me the most, the Eagles, not like that was totally shocking. They were sort of a preseason favorite amongst insiders. Carson Wentz has made a significant jump in his second year. I thought he looked very good. I have him on my fantasy team, and I will be rooting for him for that reason. I don't know. I thought they looked great. That was an impressive win on the road over a division rival. And the Vikings looked really good. I'm impressed with the Vikings. I've always liked their defense. Their defense was very good last year, but I think they've got that offensive line figured out now, which I sort of underrated early on. I didn't realize that their offense would get that much better. Dalvin Cook seems to be pretty good. And Sam Bradford, if you can give him protection, can be an effective game manager. So I like them as sort of a sleeper team. Those are the only two teams that really stuck out to me. Other than that, I don't know. Houston was disappointing. I don't know. The Titans were a team that I thought could maybe make some noise, and they lost at home to the Raiders. I wouldn't put too much stock in that, but they're not ready to jump to the next level. The Bucks didn't play. I have one of the great bets I think I've ever made. I'm going to say, have I said this already? I think I've said this. I'm sorry if I'm repeating myself. I placed a wager, myself, my Uncle Dom, and Mike Costantini of the Think Tank. The three of us put down $20 MVP bet, Jameis Winston to win MVP in this regular season, 55-1. 55-1. That pays $1,100 on a $20 investment if Jameis Winston is your MVP after this NFL season. We checked the odds on this. We set this about we put this bet in about a month ago. We checked the odds roughly a week ago. The odds have plummeted on our offshore gambling site of choice to 12-1. So now it pays, a $20 bet pays, $240? Unbelievable value. Man, oh man, did we swoop in and get that at a great price. I am now a bandwagon Tampa Bay Buccaneers fan. I am rooting for famous Jameis the whole way. I think the Bucs are going to be very good, and if he doesn't throw as many interceptions as he has in the past, I think he has an outside chance of actually winning this award. I love Jameis Winston. That's my bet of the year. That's what we will be following all year, but of course, due to Hurricane Irma, which I haven't talked about today. Ooh, sorry. I think I said this on 2 Cents. My thoughts go out to the people of Florida here. I hope that you're okay. If you live in Florida, I have family that live down there right in the eye of this storm. It seems like everything has died down now, and it seems like relief efforts are underway. But my thoughts and prayers and condolences to, the people of Florida, a horrible week and month, really a horrible month for weather. Fuck weather and fuck the Weather Channel. You bastards. Anyway, yeah, that's it, man. Like, that's really all I have to say about that first slate of games there. I just thought it was boring. I thought it was boring and unsurprising, and I hope that it does not remain that way, but this was one of the least surprising week ones in a while. It just felt like a continuation of last year. It doesn't feel like any of these teams did anything to make a significant jump and to really put themselves in playoff and Super Bowl contention. I think we're going to see a fairly straightforward replay of the 2016 season. And that's upsetting because I didn't really enjoy how the first one ended. I'm not really down for the sequel because I really wasn't a fan of part one. So if you didn't like the ending of the 2016 season, I would temper expectations for this one. Here's the thing, guys. The NFL left me unsatisfied. I was there for 9 hours. constantly refreshing my fantasy app, constantly looking at my pick'em pool picks, sweating out every dollar that I wagered on these games. And by the end of that 9-hour day, I needed more. So, like any good football fan, Monday rolls around, and I flipped on Monday Night Football. Now, the first week of the year, ESPN has made it a bit of a tradition to air two NFL games. There are two Monday night games in week one of the year. One is at 7 o'clock, and the second is at 10 o'clock. And if you have two games on ESPN, that means you need to have two broadcasts. You need to have two sets of broadcast teams. You have to have your normal A squad for the early game, and that is Sean McDonough and John Gruden. But then, for that second game, you have to hire a B squad. You have to piece together some employees that are hanging around the SportsCenter offices. You got to look deep in the Rolodex, shaking your head, flop sweating a little bit, saying, oh shit, who are we going to give the second game to? Who are we going to give the night shift? Get me some intern. Get me some secretary. Find me someone with a good voice that can do the second game. And this has been hilarious in the past and continues to be hilarious to this day. As a matter of fact, I know this segment's going really long, but God damn it, I love football. I'm just going to talk about it the whole show. Deal with it. I'm sorry. If you're not into that, like, come back next week. I don't know what to tell you. This second game was actually the most entertaining thing of the entire week for me. I did not enjoy anything as much as I enjoyed watching the commentators doing the second game. And in the past, this has been equally hilarious. Chris Berman, ESPN legend, and I believe now retiree, Chris Berman. He's no longer on the network, right? He's gone. Chris Berman used to do the color commentary on that game, or not the, or the play-by-play on that game. And he was always notoriously horrible at it. But he's Chris Berman. He's an ESPN legend. Like, let's just throw him on. No one's watching anyway. Well, this year, ESPN, the geniuses over at ESPN, firing people for having Confederate general names, having their commentators going on Twitter, calling out the president as a white supremacist. You know the deal. ESPN, Mickey Mouse himself. liberals doing liberal things. Then they, in their infinite wisdom, took a chance and hired two newbies. I shouldn't say two newbies. One newbie and another person that is unfamiliar to the ESPN audience. The play-by-play commentator was a woman by the name of Beth Mowins. Yes, I probably didn't enunciate the key word in that previous sentence. I will say it again now with the proper enunciation. The play-by-play commentator was woman Beth Mowins. Now, folks, there have been many a time on this podcast where I have proverbially been that guy. You know what I'm talking about. I certainly know what I'm talking about because I have lived a life that can be summarized in the phrase, he's that guy. And so, ladies and gentlemen, as I inch ever so slowly into minute 23 of this NFL segment, I will resist the urge to be that guy and simply say that Beth Mowins did a fine job at the play-by-play commentary. I will not rag on her all that much. See, look at me. I'm growing up. I'm being an adult. And I am resisting my misogynistic urges. How wonderful. We're all growing together. It's year three of this podcast. I'm 22 years old. And I am now becoming enlightened in the art of political correctness. What a beautiful thing. But anyway, that's not what I want to talk about. I would like to just focus in on Beth Mowins' broadcasting partner, or at least for this Monday night football game opening week. Doing the color commentary for Game 2 on ESPN was none other than the man with a Mark Sanchez tattoo. The man of 1,000 donuts. The man that has haunted my dreams for the better part of a decade. A man that belongs in a cantina in a Star Wars movie. Way before he belongs on an NFL sideline. Former coach of the New York Jets and Buffalo Bills. That's right. He's back. Rex Ryan does the color commentary. And folks, when I realized, because I flipped this game on in the first quarter, and when I realized that that voice, that stuttering, unenthusiastic, dry, and most importantly, idiotic voice coming out of my television set was Rex Ryan, I nearly went through the roof. There's actually a little dent on my bedroom ceiling because I almost shot right through it and into the sky. This was one of the most exciting moments of my life because I have said now for a good 3 to 4 years, I've said this for a long time, Rex Ryan is a horrible NFL coach. I want him as far away from my team as possible. The only time I want to see him on a sideline is if he is coaching against the Jets in a divisional game, even though he kicked our ass then. So actually, I didn't want to see him there at all. He has been the bane of my existence for far too long. He seems to be responsible for every Jets loss in recent memory, especially the most painful ones. But I have always said, this dude is a clown. He is a circus act. He is a dancing monkey. Or a dancing hippopotamus at the very least. Let's put this dude in a broadcasting booth. Let's see what his chops are. All I want to see is him as a television personality. I've been waiting for this moment for a very long time. And I am so unhappy, but also elated to report that Rex Ryan, I think, is the worst color commentator in the history of professional sports. Well, Dennis Miller did it one time on Monday Night Football, so I probably can't say that. But I would much rather. I feel like Dennis Miller had a little more insight. And anytime I get to hear Dennis Miller's voice on my television is a happy moment in my life. But he was atrocious. And this is both a great thing and a horrible thing for two reasons. Number one, it's hilarious and it's amazing because this is something we get to make fun of forever. Yet another thing to make fun of Rex Ryan for. He had a horrible showing on Monday Night Football. So that's the good news. We get to laugh at it and talk about it on a podcast. The guy could not speak. The guy not only seemed like he had never watched a professional football game before, he also seemed like he had never seen a microphone before. He was horrendous on air, and it was a hilarious thing to laugh at. The bad news is, he's probably not going to get a gig like this ever again. That's probably the last that we've seen of Rex Ryan in the booth, and that I find very disappointing. Because this was a career that I was looking forward to. This career had a lot of promise. You know, he's like the Marco Rubio of color commentators. I had high hopes for Marco Rubio when I first saw him give a speech like 4 years ago. When I saw that dude's first debate performance, I'm like, all right, this dude has a chance. This guy can be president one day. But boy, oh boy, here comes Donald Trump and all that's thrown out the window. That's what we got with Rex Ryan here. It's really too bad because I was hoping that he could get a second wind to his football career and could really make something of his life. And to see his performance and contrast that with Tony Romo's performance on Sunday, It is striking. It is striking. Quick sidebar yet again. Sure, Rex Ryan was horrible, and we'll probably never see him on television again. However, a star was born 1 p.m. In Nashville, Tennessee. Is that where the Titans play? I think they play in Nashville. Yeah, they play in Nashville. A star was born that afternoon as Tony Romo takes over for Captain Obvious Phil Sims. In the booth with broadcast legend Jim Nantz. I thought Romo was phenomenal on that game, and I cannot wait to see him do some primetime games, do some Thursday night games. I may have to watch some of them just to see Tony Romo. I thought he was phenomenal. He had such enthusiasm. He provided a lot of insight. He was excited, much like Gruden. The reason why I love John Gruden, and I think he's probably my favorite color commentator, is he loves the sport of football so much, and it excites him. Plays and decisions and the intricacies, the nuances of the sport excite John Gruden more than anybody. And I felt sort of that same childlike enthusiasm out of Tony Romo. It was as though I was watching the game with him, and I could feel his energy, and I was enjoying how much he was enjoying himself. So he did a great job. Rex Ryan did a horrible job. I find Rex Ryan hilarious, and I'm very excited for Tony Romo's future. But I will say this. Not only was a star born in Nashville, Tennessee, a star was also born in Denver, Colorado during this second Monday night game. And I'm not going to give too much of a preamble on this. I'm simply going to play the clip. This was single-handedly my favorite 30 seconds of week one of the NFL. It wasn't a single play. It wasn't a defensive stand. It wasn't a touchdown catch. It wasn't a fantasy football moment. It wasn't a backdoor cover. It was this broadcasting moment. Ladies and gentlemen, a star was born, and his name is Sergio Dip. Let's take a listen.
Beth, Coach, it's a pleasure to be with you guys here on the field from up close, just watching Coach Vance Joseph from here. You watch him now on the screen. This diversity in his background is helping him a lot tonight. Quarterback at Colorado, defensive back in the NFL. And here he is, having the time of his life this night, making his head coaching debut.
Folks, what you just listened to is the first 30 seconds and the last 30 seconds of Sergio Dip's ESPN sideline reporting career. That's it. Like lightning in a bottle. Into our lives and out of our lives. The Dip. Man, oh man, do I love some Dip. His name is Sergio. He is a bona fide superstar. Yes, he has become a bit of a meme. Maybe you've read about him before. Maybe you have no idea what I'm talking about. Here's the backstory. This sideline reporter, Sergio Dip. What a great name. Sergio Dip comes from ESPN Deportes. He is a Spanish broadcaster. I believe he's from Mexico. Is that right? Oh, I'm going to get this wrong. I apologize. English is not his native language. That is his second language. I think he's from Mexico. I could be totally off on that. Yes. Okay. He's from Mexico. Okay. Thank God. Whew. Okay. Sergio Dip. ESPN Deportes comes on. They say, let's give this kid a shot. Let's see what he's got as a sideline reporter. Now, normally sideline reporters, forgive the word choice here, dip in and out of the broadcast. They do halftime reports. They interview the coaches. They give sideline updates on injuries. They provide some key insights. And they are sort of the eyes on the ground for the broadcasters in the booth. They are supposed to provide insight into what's going on the field. Now, that requires more than one appearance on television. That requires multiple check-ins in order to get a full sense of what's going on the field. Well, Sergio didn't get that chance. That clip is all we saw of him on that broadcast. Because as you can tell, he was horrible. But horrible in a way that is so relatable and endearing that I just pray to the football gods and pray to Roger Goodell in all of his power. If you can suspend Tom Brady for Deflategate, please, oh Roger, do whatever you can to get Sergio Dip back on my TV screen. He begins this clip in an unbelievable way. And this is what I love about broadcasting. I think broadcasting is fascinating. I've always found it fascinating. Since I watched Family Feud growing up, and I watched Richard Dawson all the way through, I think Richard Karn was the host at the time, when I fell in love with game shows, I was enamored by broadcasters. Because there's a real art to it that people take for granted. People think that it's so easy to host something and to be an on-air personality and to be able to kill time. And I know this is coming from the kid with a podcast, but it is true. There's a real craft to it. And the instinct of broadcasters and what separates the good ones from the bad ones is an ability to look natural doing the most unnatural of things. Speaking in front of a group of people does not come naturally to any of us. That's not something that we're born with because we are not, or that we are raised with because we are not trained to do that. Right? Conversations are two-sided. There's a give and a take to them. And that is how we have grown up communicating. So when you take away that partner, when you take away 50% of a conversation, yet you still try to have a conversation by yourself, it comes across as flat. There has to be a layer of falseness and performance and theater to what you do. You need to be able to fake your way through it without letting the audience know you're faking your way through it. You need to seem like this is something that you want to do, that you want to say. Like, this is how I ideally communicate with you. So if you're bad as a broadcaster, it becomes immediately clear because you understand that they are too sincere. This guy was way too sincere. And that's what I love about him so much. Sure, that makes him bad at what he does. Sure, we're never going to see him again for that reason. But it's his honesty in the moment that inspires me in all areas of life. An ability to be vulnerable and be real and for me to get a sense of who you are in the moment just rocks my world. And the fact that this guy starts his segment by going, I'm here, I'm on the sideline, I'm hanging out. Now let's look at this guy. He's on your screen now. He has a diverse background. And it's helping him tonight. And he is having the time of his life. He didn't say anything there that was inherently wrong. As a matter of fact, he was way more honest and way more truthful and accurate than most sideline reporters are. But it comes across as so weird. Because he's doing something unnatural and it feels unnatural. I could feel him sweating. The sweat was lit. I felt it on my neck. It's like he was hovering over me as he was doing this broadcast. Because I could just, I was cringing, thinking, oh my God, I'm on TV. What do I say? I don't know what I'm going to say. He had not thought out what he was going to say, right? I'm here. It's an honor to be with you. It's great. I'm having a good time. That's it. Everybody's instincts, if you're a bad broadcaster, are always wrong. Even the best broadcasters have bad instincts. You have to ignore those instincts and be fake and just carry on with the performance and get in a zone that is separate from what you're thinking in the moment. And I'm so happy that this guy didn't do that, even though it resulted in no more Sergio dip segments. But all I want to do is dip more into this guy's life. Okay. Wow. That was it. Okay. That's football. Okay. Well, this took up most of the podcast. I guess we're not talking Trump this week. Thank Christ. I didn't want to do that. I got a few more little bits and then we're going to wrap this show up. So how about some music? And then we'll come back and we'll do more Nico show. Okay? Okay. I love you all. I'll be right back. It's a podcast that you like, hopefully. Here you go. All right, before we get out of here, a couple bits from my life that you've missed. I'm going to catch you up on random stories that I wanted to tell and I never got a chance to tell them. First of all, first things first, new inductee, ladies and gentlemen, into the Douchey Vanity License Plate Hall of Fame. This has been an ongoing series. I encourage you to submit your entries, your candidates to be considered for inclusion in this prestigious Hall of Fame. Douchey Vanity License Plates. As you know, I have an obsession with these. I hate people that decide to put words on their license plates to showcase something about themselves. I think it's really douchey and obnoxious. And if you're one of those people that does that, please reconsider your life choices immediately. I have made it my mission to call these people out, to take them to task on this podcast. And the latest entry into the, again, Vanity License Plate, Douchey Vanity License Plate Hall of Fame reads... P-R-I-N-G-L-E. Pringle. Pringle. What are you doing? What are you doing? Is Pringle the name of your cat? Let's just be honest here. It's the name of your cat, isn't it? Which is not a horrible name for a cat. It's got a nice ring to it. Rhymes with jingle. It's cute. It's a snack food. Nothing like snack foods for cat names, but I will say this. If it's not the name of your cat, what are you doing giving free advertising to a potato chip company? If there's anything douchier than putting your pet's name on your license plate, it's putting some random brand name on your license plate. What has Pringle ever done for you? If they're not paying you for that shit, take it off. It better be an inside joke or something. Better be some funny name that you had in college. You know, your buddies dared you to go streaking, holding nothing but a Pringles can over your dick. It was like some frat bet that you lost. So ever since then, your nickname has been Pringle. All your college buddies bring that up at your fantasy draft. Maybe there's a funny story around it or something. But all I read when I saw that was... advertising was product placement on your vehicle. Have some self-respect. Welcome to the Vanity License Plate Hall of Fame, Pringle guy. I am bad with money. That's point number two I want to make about my life. I'm bad with money. And I did a bad thing a couple of weeks ago with money. Now, I'm not talking about my minor gambling addiction. Oh no, I would never feel regret about that. I'm not talking about all the wagers, the healthy wagers, might I add, that I have made on various sporting events in the last month. I'm not talking about the McGregor fight. Not talking about week one of the NFL. Not talking about Emmy prop bets. Oh, that's right. The Emmys are this week. I forgot to make predictions. We'll let that slide. We'll get to that next week. I am talking about a shopping spree. Now, I am not a big shopper. I'm not one that goes out and makes impulse buys. I'm actually pretty good with that. Because growing up, my parents never used to buy me stuff. I mean, I was spoiled as a kid. Don't get me wrong. I was pampered a lot and I had a very good upbringing and I was very well off financially. But they didn't buy me a lot of things. And I think that value sort of stuck within me that if you don't need it, don't get it. There are better things you can spend money on. There are experiences that you could spend your money on. Wouldn't you much rather take that family trip to South Carolina this year than buy a new laptop? As a matter of fact, I didn't have a cell phone until college. I went through all of high school. Have I ever told this story before? Or have I ever made that point about myself? I did not own a cell phone until I was 18 years old going off to college. And the shit hit the fan and I was like, listen, I'm going to be away from home now. I probably need a way to talk to people. Didn't have a cell phone growing up. Never felt the need for it. Never wanted to spend the money on it. I was always told that I had to buy it myself if I wanted to get it. And I just never got it. So I was not one that bought things. And I'm a saver and I'm also a gambler because that's fun. That's an experience. It's something that I like spend money on because it's enjoyment. Couple weeks ago at this point, I've been wanting to tell this for a while. I stumbled upon a website called Buseyisms.com. Now, Buseyisms.com, for those in the loop, for those that are perhaps a fan of my work on RFF Radio and Two Cents Radio, will think about one person when you hear the term Buseyisms. And whoever you think that person is, you're right. Because there's only one person that it could be referring to. Buseyisms is a site created and founded by Gary Busey. Academy Award nominated actor Gary Busey. Two-time star of the hit television show Celebrity Apprentice. Gary Busey has a way with words. And has these sayings called Buseyisms. It was a common thing for the Celebrity Apprentice. It was a recurring joke on the Celebrity Apprentice. Gary Busey would take words, turn those words into acronyms, read those acronyms in a poetic fashion, and in doing so, define what the word meant to him. Now, Gary Busey, being a man that has gotten in a motorcycle accident many a years ago, is a special human being. He's out there. And I say that in the most euphemistic of ways. He's a bit of a kooky character. But anyway, I was scrolling through Twitter one day and I saw that one Gary Busey put a link to Buseyisms.com. And what I found was one of the worst things that's happened to my wallet in a very long time. And it is hating Gary Busey for what he decided to tweet that day. Buseyisms.com is a collection of Gary Busey-inspired quotes printed on elaborate 8.5 by 11 prints and photographs of Busey himself. These Buseyisms, as heard on Celebrity Apprentice, and some that have never been heard before, have been printed out in elegant fashion and is being mailed to those that would like to cough up the $10 to $20 for each of these prints. Now, let me give you some examples of Buseyism prints. Music. Magnificent, unique sound, inviting creativity. Day. Dream another you. Relationship. Really exciting love affair turned into overwhelming nightmare. Sobriety hangs in peril. Truth. Taking real understanding to heart. Now, no other way. And of course, my favorite, fart, feeling a rectal transmission. These are real. Look these up. Buseyisms.com. So, I saw all of these products, and of course, they were priced at varying levels. There were Buseyism prints that were more valuable and had a higher demand than others and were priced accordingly. And I scrolled through this catalog of about 50 Buseyisms and found four that caught my fancy and purchased them for some of the biggest Celebrity Apprentice fans that I know. God, I you know what? I just realized. I was talking about RFF before. I never bought one for Rob, my co-host on 2 Cents Radio. I never bought one for him. I need to do that. All right, anyway, nobody tell him. I think I'm going to buy Rob a Buseyism print. But here's the thing. So yes, you're probably wondering, Nico, what kind of psychopath stumbles upon a makeshift shopping website inspired by a has-been celebrity turned reality television star and thinks to himself, this is where I want to spend my paycheck? Do you really have that little self-control? You must be a very special human being. And my answer is yes, I have mental problems. That I can tell you for sure. This was not the moment in my life when I realized that something was wrong in my head. Certainly not the first mental illness I have, and it will certainly not be the last. But the reason why I decided to take that leap and make this purchase is because all of these prints were hand-signed by Gary Busey himself. Yes, not only were these Buseyism posters and photographs, they were autographed. And if you put in the little special request section of the Shopify page, any special request, you could customize what that signature was. So for example, if you wanted to have Gary Busey sign for your Trump supporter friend a print that says Make America Great Again, all you got to do is type it in the comment section. Please sign this Make America Great Again from Gary Busey. And sure enough, when the thing arrives in the mail, I got a beautiful print that said the word freedom on it. Signed, Make America Great Again, from Gary Busey. Gave that to my Trump-supporting friend, former Celebrity Apprentice superfan, my buddy Jimmy. If you want to get a birthday gift for a special someone, like your aunt, who is a massive fan of the Celebrity Apprentice as well, you just have him sign it, Happy Birthday, from Gary Busey. That was sent to my aunt as well. Yes, I spent way too much money on this. Yes, I was way too excited. But I gotta tell you, if you're looking for a great gag gift and it is for a niche audience, that I will grant you. But if you're looking for a good gag gift, if you're looking for a good birthday present, if you're looking for a good Secret Santa gift come holiday season, Buseyisms.com. Had to get that off my chest. That is my guilty impulse buy of the week. And finally, oh God, how long do I want to have a conversation about this? Ugh. Okay, really quick. Twin Peaks ended. I've waxed poetic about Twin Peaks way too much on my various podcasts. You're all sick and tired of hearing about it already, I understand. Yes, you should watch Twin Peaks. Yes, it's amazing. David Lynch is a genius, yada, yada, yada. We don't understand how it ended, but we loved it anyway. I know it sounds very pretentious film nerd of me. It's annoying. You're done with it. You're ready to move on to the next sleeper television program of the fall season. I understand. Twin Peaks ended. It was amazing. It was a transformative experience for me. I've been obsessed with David Lynch now for the better part of the summer. He has inspired me single-handedly to start writing screenplays. I have had a bunch of ideas for movie scripts that I wanted to write. I have begun slowly chipping away at those ideas. They are starting to metamorphosize into actual pieces of creative art This is something I'm actually doing now. I'm done talking about it. I'm actually doing it. And it's quite amazing that I'm doing it. And one of his influences on me has been the use of dreams. David Lynch believes in the power of dreams and the power of the subconscious, really trying to tap into your subconscious brain. That's redundant. Into your subconscious to figure out exactly what it all means and to put it on screen to the best of your ability, because he believes that there is some deeper meaning in ourselves that we have left untapped. I gotta tell you, I've been trying to take his advice to heart. I have been trying to get in tune with exactly what I'm trying to tell myself, I guess. Trying to read into my dreams a little bit more to be aware of what my brain is thinking when I'm not thinking myself. Am I making any sense? Here's the deal. I've been paying attention to dreams, and I know there's nothing more boring in life than people talking about their dreams, but I'm going to talk about my dreams anyway. I had a weird dream this week. Here's the scenario, and tell me what this means. I was in the Civil War. Now, I don't know how I know that I was in the Civil War. I don't remember seeing any flags, any insignia that would, like, tell me that this was a Civil War, and not just any, like, pre-20th century war. I mean, this could have been the Seven Years' War, for all I know. This could have been the War of 1812. I have nothing to prove otherwise. But for some reason, I knew that I was in the Civil War, and I was a doctor in the Civil War. I was a surgeon. Not just any doctor. I was doing procedures on people. Why I would be that guy, I don't know. I've never thought about being a surgeon, but my brain was thinking this. And so I was in the Civil War, and we were in the heat of battle, and we were in a tent. And a man came in, and it looked like he had a pretty bad infection on his foot. Now, I'm no surgeon in real life. I just play one in my dreams. And I am not qualified to diagnose this wound, but it looked pretty nasty to me. Like, I think there were a few toes off. The skin was going in all sorts of directions. A lot of blood. Pretty nasty shit. And I came to the realization, as you do in all Civil War movies. I mean, any war movie that involves a surgeon in some way, shape, or form, you know that an amputation is involved. And I came to this realization in this dream, I gotta cut this fucking guy's foot off. That's what's happening right here. So I got very squeamish immediately. Don't know why. It seemed like I had been doing this for a while. Like, if I'm a Civil War surgeon and I was the only professional in the room that could diagnose this guy's wound as being fatal, I shouldn't, like, be afraid to perform the amputation. But this procedure was freaking me out. So anyway, I am in the Civil War. I gotta chop this guy's foot off. And I go get a cleaver. And I'm talking cleaver, dude. Like, it's not a saw. It's not a scalpel. It's not a knife. It's no instrument that you would see in an operating room. It is a fucking cleaver. Like the type you would use to chop a branch off of a dying tree. I grab the cleaver, and in my other hand, I grab a Sharpie. Now you might be thinking to yourself, wait, Nico, Sharpies weren't around during the Civil War. And what I would also say to you is Nico was not around in the Civil War, and they certainly wouldn't be making Nico a Civil War surgeon. So let's suspend disbelief for the purpose of this story, okay? So I took the Sharpie, and I drew a line on exactly where I wanted to make the incision. Not like it would really be helping me that much, because it would be a pretty a shoddy procedure considering that I was using a cleaver. So the preciseness of this line was fairly irrelevant. I took this cleaver, put it over my head, began to swing it down upon this poor soldier's ankle. And right as the cleaver was about to make contact with his flesh, I woke up. And I woke up to a flop sweat of me you know, freaking out about having to perform an amputation in the Civil War. So that's that. I ask you, the listener, what do you think this means? Because I've been trying to wrap my head around it. I'm not sure what this says about my fears or my insecurities or about my my role in society, how I treat those around me. Am I someone that put myself in the position of nurturer and of caretaker as someone that is positioned to heal the wounds of others while being unequipped to do so? Is this a reflection of my inability to solve my own problems, not making the difficult choices, not making the sacrifices, the incisions, if you will, to fix the deep-rooted infection that is plaguing my life and that is plaguing my livelihood? Am I just unable to cut off my own ankle in order to stop the infection from spreading? Or am I going to continue to live in fear of that one moment? Is this the reason why I'm not going to therapy? I don't know. But I'll have you know this, David Lynch. You've really fucked up my head. And I both thank you for that incredible experience. 18 weeks of Twin Peaks has taught me a lot. But at the same time, it's really caused an existential crisis in this 22-year-old's brain. Now it has resulted in a very confusing ending to his podcast. All right? There we go. That's Nico's update, Nico's life in a nutshell there, that's a podcast. How about that? Let's wrap this show up. All right, that is going to do it for the Nico Show. Thanks for listening. Thanks for waiting. Thank you for your patience. Thank you for your loyalty. Thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. Everything I said before, multiply that by 10 and then square that number. And that's how much I love each and every one of you. I hope to be back next week or sometime in the near distant future. Life has been busy and sometimes taking the time out of my schedule to do this is tough. But man, we've been doing this for 3 years and I have no intention of stopping anytime soon. So if you want more of me, I have not been taking it easy on my other podcasts. 2 Cents, we just did a show last week. It was really fun. Hope we can do that a little more often. Why Is This a Thing continues to be a weekly endeavor. Once every Wednesday, you can find a new episode of Why Is This a Thing in your podcast feeds. We just did a recap of the Netflix film Death Note. Check that out. Adam Hall and I have been doing movie reviews on our show Movie Hopping. If you are someone that saw the movie It this weekend, go check out Movie Hopping. Subscribe on iTunes, on Stitcher, on whatever podcast service you fancy. We've been doing those shows every once in a while about new releases. Not bad movies, hopefully very good movies. So check out us talking about It. It that movie is so popular. It made $130 million this weekend and is like breathing new life into the Stephen King universe. It's incredible. And I kind of enjoyed it. I mean, I'm not a sucker for horror movies and I don't like clowns very much. And I did enjoy myself. So we have a very compelling conversation about that on Movie Hopping, the think tank. We try to do shows every once in a while, but TooManyThoughtsMedia.com or TMT.media is where you can find everything. I love each and every one of you. JETs suck, 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 and let's continue sucking. Let's get that first pick in the draft. I'll be back talking about hopefully the Emmy Award program next week. It's award season yet again. And until next time, ladies and gentlemen, please tune in to this here podcast where you, yes, you will finally hear the story of Lord Steve. Love ya.